Chapter 7. From the Depths. The Pyre. From the Skies.
Fire tempers us. Fire shapes us. And we become what we are because we know too that fire destroys. Let us embrace this destruction and harness it to our purpose. To protect our charge, the annihilation of the enemy must be absolute.
Vulcan, the gift of desolation. Unto the anvil of war, Shomar thought. His blood still blazing from Vulcan's call to brotherhood. The Primarch's words fell like the tempering blows of a hammer. He and his company had passed through the furnace, as Vulcan had done, and brought destruction to the orcs at the moment the Xenos had believed their victory in hand. The company had not left the cargo bay far behind, when Ventel said,
"Here, Captain! We are far enough! 2,000 meters!"
The passageway leading from the bay was even more irregular than the one before. Shomar was moving through a cleavage between wrecks, and the company had paused in a region that was a tangle of metal plates and frameworks so haphazardly welded together it resembled a frozen explosion. There were more orcs further ahead. Shomar could hear their growling thunder, but there was some distance yet between them and the legionaries, and there were no intersection passages here.
"Good," said Shomar. "Place the charge and conceal it."
Ventel and Shendrak Nalkor used melter bombs to eat through the crisscrossing girders that formed the wall, creating a space large enough for the seismic charge. When they had it in place, they used more grenades to collapse the structure around the bomb. It would wait in its nest of metal, undisturbed until its death cry was summoned.
Ruthan said, "This is the longest we have gone without being attacked."
Shomar listened again to the sound of orcs ahead. With the noise bouncing and echoing off the metal of the zigzagging passageways, it was difficult to get a fix on distance. The sound was fainter than it had been, though. He was sure of that. It was time to go. With the termite destroyed, the final stages of the campaign were heavily dependent on precise coordination and all the companies being in position at the critical juncture. But it was unlikely the orcs did not know where the 6th company was. The fact that they were not attacking was more than strange.
"I do not like the enemy's anomalous behaviour," said Shomar.
He turned to Ventel.
"Take the company. Are the coordinates clear?"
"They are, Captain. The journey will be a short one."
"Good. Then be where we must be at the appointed time. I will join you by then."
To Ruthan, he said,
"One squad with me. I want to know what the enemy is doing."
As the rest of his legionaries headed back in the direction of the cargo bay, Shomar's squad of 5 moved forwards. Shomar set a rapid pace, less concerned with stealth than with catching up. The sound had decreased again in just a few seconds. The orcs were heading somewhere quickly. A few minutes into the pursuit, the din of another large group of orcs rose from below. That sound grew louder, and then the passageway passed over a larger open area. The deck here was riven by crevasses, and Shomar crouched to look down. Beneath the passage was a huge tunnel. It was clearly one of the major arteries of the attack moon, and it was full. A horde of shouting orcs stampeded through it, rushing with purpose and in the opposite direction of the great hall. Over the noise of stampeding feet came the piercing wail of bestial horns.
"Where are they fleeing to?" Ruthan wondered. "They are not fleeing," said Shomar.
He heard no panic in the rumble of alien voices. The chieftains he saw below were shouting and pointing forwards. These orcs were not routed. They had a goal. Directions were untrustworthy in the grotesque patchwork of the orc base, but the upward slope of the tunnel told Shomar what he needed to know.
"They're heading towards the exterior."
"Where they would have loading base," said Ruthan.
"Precisely. This is their full mobilization."
Kalmar swore under his breath as he returned the orc's fire. Below the deck, there was a sharp drop of about 6 meters to the slope of the lower bowl of the cavern. His legionaries could make the descent, but they would be completely exposed, and the orcs were under cover. Then horns sounded through the halls of the attack moon, their cries long, wailing, and ugly. They repeated and echoed, overlapping with the urgency of their call. They shook the platform, and the orcs in the galleries suddenly hesitated in their attack. After the first cycle of cries from the horns, most of the greenskins started moving again, but there was confusion in their ranks. Some resumed their rush towards the core, others turned the other way, heading outwards. Only a few remained, too eager to kill the present enemy than obey the conflicting commands of Challenge and Klaxon.
"Now is our chance!"
Kalmar shouted.
"Finish the beasts above the target zone!"
Nocturnian rockets slammed into the galleries, collapsing arches that were so crude they might have been natural formations. The rubble blocked the orcs' paths in and out of the cavern. It crushed the greenskins directly over the sites where the seismic charge would sit, and created a mound of debris in which to conceal it. Kalmar led the run to the edge of the platform and leapt down, drawing the diminishing fire from the orcs, racing to complete the mission before the enemy answered its new call. Raitan never hesitated as he fought. He and his brothers held their positions at the edge of the huge ruin. Through flame and shell, they fired at the orcs. Not once did Raitan break from killing the greenskins. And yet, as Vulcan killed the warlord and turned to smite the lesser orcs below, Raitan felt as if his consciousness had been seized, detached from his body, to bear witness to the overwhelming force of the Primarch. He thought that the orcs felt it too. Every aspect of the war in the hall that was not centred on Vulcan became thin, insignificant, a pantomime background to the true conflict, the main event. Vulcan's presence filled the hall. The shelling faltered, then stopped. Raitan was surprised that the orcs would lose their will to fight to that degree. Dimly through the smoke he saw cannons beginning to withdraw.
"They're retreating," said Tekel.
"No,"
said Vulcan, his voice reverberating above the diminished clamour of the battle.
"Orcs do not surrender. They do not retreat unless forced to. This is something else."
Vulcan leapt from the top of the wreckage and came down amid the orcs with the force of thunder, and the greenskins fell back before him. They quailed before the being who had slain their unstoppable leader, and the ripples of panic spread out around the Primarch as orcs scrambled away from the dark colossus. Then he cut two down with a stroke of Nightforged, and burned a furrow through their ranks with Anvil's light. Burned corpses toppled, their heads and upper torsos vaporized. The orcs screamed at Vulcan and charged back. He met their attack with one whose ferocity dwarfed theirs, and Raitan almost laughed with exhilaration to see the orcs outnumbered by a single warrior. The greenskins surrounded Vulcan, stabbing and shooting wildly. Vulcan marched into the tide and slew orcs as if he were reaping grain. The horde could not slow him. The faster they attacked, the more quickly they gave themselves up to death.
"To the Primarch!"
Raitan shouted.
"Into the fires of battle! Unto the anvil of war!"
his brothers answered, and they charged out of their shelter. The orcs had begun to ignore the legionaries, turning their attention instead to the greater threat in their midst. They paid for their mistake, gunned down by the dozen, and it was several seconds before enough of the aliens understood what they had turned their backs on to try to fight back. The mob fought with itself, trying to attack Vulcan and the legionaries at the same time, and failing at both. The five legionaries made for Vulcan, intending to fight at his side, but they moved through the orcs slowly. They fought as a unit, covering each other's flanks, Raitan and Tekel at the fore, cutting down the brutes with bolter shells to the head. They marched over the corpses of the fallen, crunching bones beneath ceramite boots, surrounded by the stench of smoke and foul orc bodies. And though they advanced through the hall with purpose and without pause, they could not catch up with Vulcan. The Primarch tore through the space of the battlefield with a speed approaching a sprint. He ripped through the orcs as though they were air. They swarmed up his frame, attempting to bring him down by any means, even the mindless application of sheer mass. At times, Vulcan disappeared from Raitan's view, but he always reappeared moments later, hurling his attackers to the ground and gutting them with his blade. Discordant horns began to sound. The orcs howled with them, and their movements became confused, torn between the imperatives to answer the call and to kill Vulcan.
The companies are reporting in,
Burhan voxed.
All seven seismic charges have been set, but the greenskins are heading towards the surface of the base. They are preparing to invade.
We must hold them, my sons,
Vulcan declared, without pausing in his slaughter of the orcs.
A short while longer. Fight them with me. Kill them. Fill the horde with our presence and our challenge. I have sent word to the fleet. Make the orcs tarry, and soon their defeat will be inevitable.
Anvil's light blazed again, a star suddenly born in the gloom of the hall, and orc bodies disintegrated. Raitan saw the flare of the plasma pistol as the light of an infallibility forged through the work of a cosmic furnace. Vulcan had achieved the perfection every warrior of Nocturne sought to embody, and, by his example, inspired all to the ideals he made manifest. Raitan threw himself into the battle with renewed energy and ferocious joy. They were six against thousands. The Primarch had already done the impossible. It would be a small matter to force the thousands to turn from the goal the subordinates of the great warlord demanded they perform, to turn their savage instincts his way and slaughter them. He followed in the footsteps of his Primarch, and no enemy was too powerful. No odds were too great. A greenskin crouched beneath Raitan's arc of fire, lunged up and grabbed his helm with massive claws. It shrieked at him and hurled him into Tekel. Three more orcs leapt in to take advantage. Sobak turned his flamer on the trio. The flames washed over Raitan and Tekel, and Raitan welcomed the rush of purifying fire. He and Tekel blasted the attackers to pulp, and then, the flames still streaming from their armour, they rushed even more fiercely into the horde. Tekel was laughing, and it took Raitan a second to realise that he was too. It was the laughter of triumph. The war had spread a graveyard of ships through the void, stretching from the near orbit of Antium out towards the edge of the system, an attenuated comet tail of debris that would orbit Taras forever, a thousand broken monuments to the struggle for a world of death. There were wrecks that were relatively intact. The frigate Dragonspine had broken in half, its stern and bow drifting slowly apart, spreading frozen gas and tumbling corpses in their wake. When the orc ships died, most of them disintegrated, as if reality had suddenly awakened to the affront of these vessels and torn them into shreds. Separated from the strength of the attack moon, the swarm of orc vessels was unable to overwhelm the ships of Nocturne. Large numbers of greenskinned ships were still at anchor over Antium, still sending down their troops to the planet. Now, as the flame rot took the fleet in towards the orc base once more, some of the attacking ships broke away, racing ahead to the heart of the orc invasion. On the bridge of the Flamerort, the Orspex operator noted their departure.
"Why make things easier for us?" she asked.
An orc ramship blew up under fire from the battleship's broadsides. Its detonating mass careened forwards and collided with the Flamerort on her starboard flank. The impact was close to the bow, but was strong enough to shake the bridge. Ochi glanced at the damage report as it arrived on a picked screen next to his command throne. He had ordered the alarm klaxons silenced hours ago. The ship's crew was more than aware of what was being done to the hull.
Easier, he thought. That is a matter of debate.
They are increasing the pressure on us, he said to the bridge officers. They are rushing to aid the mass descent from the attack moon. They represent the real danger.
The Flamerort drew closer to the orc base. It shuddered again as 100 orc cannon shells hit simultaneously. The void shields managed to repulse the worst of the damage, but the arrival of each bombardment was eroding the Leviathan's defensive strength. The process was as gradual as waves crashing against rock, and as inexorable.
"Launch base," Ochi voxed. "What is your status? Standing by for your command."
Ochi nodded to himself. The operation was delicate. The Flamerort and its escorts were coming in an unnaturally tight formation. In the Oculus, the strike cruiser Drake Lord was nudging into view to port and starboard. If even one ship underwent a cataclysmic plasma explosion, Its death would devastate the rest of the fleet. And the vessels were going to have so many launch bays open at the same time. The risk was enormous. With the destruction of the termite, it was also necessary. The Legion was courting one disaster in order to avert a greater one. The situation did not please Ochi, but it did not surprise him.
"Approaching target," the Auspex officer called out. "Overlay," said Ochi.
Diagrammatic runes appeared on the oculus. A bright red icon flashed over the Klostzatz's crash site. The scar was bigger now, marked by the fresh burns where the Orc ramship had destroyed itself. The wound was profound, too. The icon was centered over the shaft drilled into the attack moon by the Spear of Fire. Ochi spoke to the fleet.
"Concentrate fire to the fore. Aim for the ships in low orbit and in proximity to the Greenskin base. Direct the enemy's attention to that threat."
He did not think of the orcs responding logically to his feint. Instead, he was leading a dangerous animal to the slaughter. The huge barrage began.
"Enemy responding,"
the Auspex officer said a few moments later.
"They are evading and moving towards an attack position above the ecliptic."
"Track them. Keep them blinded with our fire."
He paused, watching the icon flash, watching the coordinates next to it align. "Now," he thought.
"All ships open bay doors. Gunships, launch, launch, launch."
The tacticarium screens lit up with one green rune after another. Ochi could not feel the effect of the launches, but he imagined he did. A distant, rhythmic, determined thrum in the hull, a hopeful one this time. A steady pulse as Thunderhawks streamed from the Flamewrought and the other large ships of the fleet. 100 gunships left their berths. They would be easy prey for the orcs as they crossed the void, but only if the enemy saw them. Next to the threats presented by the battleship and cruisers, they were insignificant. They were small glints streaking through the dark. There was nothing they could do against a weapon like the attack moon, except that they were also small enough to follow the path of the Spear of Fire. Under the camouflage of the barrage, while the great ships hurled themselves into the full rage of the insect swarm of the orcs, some made for the hulks boarded by the other companies of the Legion, while the rest descended into the shaft bored into the attack moon by the termite, racing to retrieve the hundreds of legionaries before the full immensity of the orc numbers fell on Antium. The 7 companies of Nocturne, having secured the death of the attack moon, charged back towards the shaft to ensure its death had meaning and would not be the hollow destruction of an empty abode. Vulcan had foreseen the possibility that the termites would not make a return journey, and he had carefully planned the positions of the seismic charges relative to each other. The charges were directional, and while the companies had radiated out with Vulcan as the center, they had also moved back up towards the surface. The distance was negligible with respect to the impact of the explosives, so close to the core of the base, but it was strategically vital. The companies could make their way back to the shaft, whether through passages or by forcing their way with demolition charges, faster than heading back to the termites' position. And, if they were a few hundred meters closer to the surface, they would gain valuable seconds as the Thunderhawks gathered them and reversed their course back up the shaft. Shomar barreled along the last stretch of the ragged corridor leading to the termite shaft. He and his squad had followed the trail marked by the rest of the 6th Company. He passed through a wall whose opening bore molten edges, the mark of a melter bomb used to defeat the barrier. The legionaries came to a stop on a ledge of splayed metal. A wind roared up the great shaft, the atmosphere of the attack moon rushing out into the void. Shomar's company had just finished boarding, and the Thunderhawk Hand of Fire hovered close to the gap in the wall, its side door open. To Shomar's right, he saw a stream of gunships, some descending the shaft, others heading back up. Enemy fire began about 3/4 of the way towards the top. The orcs had noticed the presence of the Thunderhawks and were trying to bring them down. The gunships weaved, doing their best to evade, but they had little room to manoeuvre. There was barely space in the shaft for 2 to pass each other. Orc rockets shot out from the side. They flew into the exhaust of a Thunderhawk's starboard engine and exploded. The gunship went out of control and into the path of another that was accelerating towards the void.
The two ships collided, and more Orc rockets lanced out into the developing wreck. A fireball bloomed in the shaft, spreading out to all sides, driving other gunships into desperate evasions to prevent a chain reaction. The craft nearest to the collision flew above the wreck and sent Hellstrike missiles at the Orc position. The blasts faded, and there was no more fire from that portion of the shaft. The wreckage of the gunships tumbled down towards the center of the attack moon, careening off the walls. There was a grace to the fall, and a terrible kind of silence. From this distance, there was also the illusion of slow movement. Shomar leapt into the hand of fire. The squad followed, and he slammed the side door shut. The pilot turned the Thunderhawk around, aiming its nose back up the shaft. Shomar watched through a viewing block as the ricocheting wreckage came closer, growing large, shedding grace and gaining vicious speed. It bounced back and forth across the shaft, the movements unpredictable. The pilot gunned the Thunderhawk's engines and aimed it up the middle of the tunnel. He had a clear run for space. There were no other gunships coming the other way. There was only the wreck. Beside Shomar, Ruthan said, "Will fate be this capricious?"
"I choose to think not," said Shomar.
Hand of Fire raced upwards. The wreckage came closer, a cascade of metal and flame. It smacked off the sides of the shaft again and passed across the path of the Thunderhawk. The gunship jerked upwards and clipped the edge of a spinning tail. The impact jutted through the hull. Hand of Fire veered to the side, one wing scraping against the wall, sparking flame. Then the wreckage was past, and the Thunderhawk flew on.
"We will not bow to fate," Shomar said. "It may bloody us, but we will bring it to heel."
The reports of the extraction's progress came to Vulcan over the Vox. He threw himself into his final battle on the attack moon, making himself the threat the Orcs could not ignore. The more of the greenskin horde he kept here, the more he drew away from his troops and from the enemy's embarkation points. If he held the Orcs long enough, he would save the mission. If he saved the mission, he would save Antium. If he saved Antium, he would save the Taras system. The Orcs swarmed around him, rushing to their annihilation. Their weapons were feeble mockeries compared to the Warlord's hammer. They slashed at the damage in his armor. They drew blood, but every wound was a spur to greater fury. If the Orcs were a tide, then he broke it. He smashed it and taught it fear. The greenskins rushed him in their anger, and he took them apart. Closer to the center of the room, Raitan and the others fought on. Vulcan could see the fire in their struggle. He knew it was more than personal loyalty to him that drove them. They had seen, they had heard, and they had understood.
"There," Vulcan thought, "the alloy is forged." With a determination born of hope, he killed the Orcs anew.
"Come to me,"
he shouted at the greenskins. "I have taken your leader. I am taking all of you to the grave. Come and stop me." "Time," he thought. "Come and give me a bit more time."
Now it seemed the Orcs declined his invitation. He unleashed another withering blast with the plasma pistol, and after the flash he saw that the horde had thinned. The Orcs nearest him had not given up, but further away they were streaming out of the hall. Some greater instinct or a greater call was summoning them. They were rushing to the prey that was Antium. No more time, then.
"Numas!" Vulcan called. "We are done here. Now we must finish our task."
In four strides, he cut through the shrinking army of greenskins and was halfway to the squad. The legionaries blasted their way to meet him. Then they all turned for the entrance to the shaft. Orc fire followed them, a last attempt to punish the invaders. Outside the hall, at the end of the shaft, the Thunderhawk, Eye of Furnas, was hovering, its engines firing short bursts back to the left and right as it held its position.
"You are the last, Lord Primarch,"
the pilot Rancon voxed.
"Are the other ships clear of the attack moon?" Vulcan asked.
"The last few are just exiting the tunnel."
Vulcan jumped up into the troop compartment.
"Then we shall not tarry."
When the last of his sons was aboard, he said,
"Let us go."
As the Thunderhawk rose, he voxed Ochi on the flame rot.
"Have the Orcs launched?"
he asked.
"They are beginning to,"
said Ochi. The first ships have departed. I am seeing bays opening up across the Greenskin base. Do you wish the Thunderhawks to engage?
No, said Vulcan. Get them clear and recover them.
Eye of the Furnace roared up the shaft. It travelled much faster than the termite had descended, but the distance seemed much greater now, as the seconds vanished and choices disappeared.
Send the warning to all ships, Vulcan told Ochi. Prepare for the destruction of the attack moon. This will be the only warning.
Orc gunfire clanged against the sides of the Thunderhawk. A rocket flashed over the nose. Another came in a diagonal approach, missing its target but exploding as it grazed the top of the Thunderhawk. The ship bucked in the explosion but kept going. Then they were through, pulling out, passing once more through the tomb that was the Klostsats, the surface of the Orc base pulling away so slowly. Too slowly. Vulcan saw the hatches too, sudden craters opening like plague boils across the face of the attack moon. Orc dropships rose from them, blocky, improbable machines, capable of perhaps a single flight. But that would be enough. That would be too much.
We killed the beast now,
Vulcan declared. He blinked through the auto-sensors of his helm and sent the detonation command. The signal travelled from his armour to the seismic charges. Seconds passed. The bombs went off so deep inside it seemed at first that nothing had changed. Then agony racked the attack moon's form. Crevasses spiderwebbed across the surface. The crust vibrated. A dropship climbed unsteadily from a tremor-gripped launch bay, slammed into the side, overturned and fell back in. The shaking increased. The Orc base trembled like a madman's fist. Fire erupted from the fissures. Vulcan sensed the unheard groan convulsing the great monster. And then the Leviathan exploded. The planetoid became a meteor swarm. Huge chunks of debris smashed through the Orc fleet, turning ships into gas. The surface suddenly rose towards Eye of the Furnace, the attack moon grasping for the gunship in the instant of its death. As it rose, it parted. The crust became a storm of rubble. Fragments the size of frigates rushed for the Thunderhawk. Behind them came the expanding fireball of the base's destruction. The gunship jerked, and the pilot fought to maneuver away from the rocks. A vast piece soared past within meters of Eye of the Furnace. It came so close, Vulcan could see the tunnels bored into it like those of an anthill. Orcs fell from the tunnels. Some still lived and clung to the edges, their mouths gaping in horror and shock. For long moments, the Thunderhawk was inside the maelstrom of debris, in the depths of racing destruction. The pilot showed the skill that Vulcan had trained into his legion and threaded the gunship through the catastrophe. Then the meteors were past. Eye of the Furnace was clear, and it had outrun the fire. It flew on, heading for the fleet. The rippling of void shields showed the warships weathering the impacts of the dead attack moon, their guns blasting away the larger fragments of the planetoid. The Orc fleet could not do the same. Its ships were too slow, too clumsy, too makeshift. They had come together around a monster, and now they died with it. And below, the atmosphere of Antium burned with the fires of the rain of stones. Numion was firing from the top of the narrow peak into the orcs that were swarming around the narrow base. He risked a moment to look up, the same moment that the orcs shouted in confusion and saw that the sky had turned red. The clouds were on fire. Saluran laughed.
The orcs are coming in for a hard landing, he said.
The blaze turned the night into the interior of a furnace, and now, heated by re-entry, the burning incandescent rubble of the Greenskin base streaked to the ground. Smaller fragments landed on the lava plain. The earth shook under an orbital bombardment. Wherever a meteor struck, orcs died. Thunder had come to the surface of Antium, and it roared and roared without cease. Numion still fired his bolter, but he had to grasp hold of the peak to keep from being shaken off. Beyond the southern volcanic range, something big came down. Suddenly, it was as bright as day. A sun
rose over the mountains, ugly and raging at its birth. The light blinded, then a pillar of fire, kilometers wide, bellowed up to the sky. The legionaries crouched down, auto-senses slamming shut as the shockwave arrived. It flattened the army on the plain. But over the mountains, the fire climbed and spread, and the planet shook from yet more impacts. If there had been a civilization on Antium, it would have died on this day. Perhaps if the orcs had managed to spread their full numbers over the land, they would have withstood the storm. But they had not landed. Their greatest number had perished with the attack moon. Numion could see again. The mountains to the south had vanished in the dust. The clouds burned and the rocks fell yet, but the sky was beginning to blacken once more. Another kind of night was gathering over all of Antium, a night that would not pass for centuries. The volcanoes roared, shocked to life again by the hammer blows from the sky.
Artellus!
A voice cracked on the vox. It was Vaughn.
Is it true?
It is, Lord Commander, said Numion.
The Greenskin base has fallen. The orcs will have nothing left to the south. There is only the army of the plain, and it is badly hurt.
Good. Good,
said Vaughn, the words heavy with meaning and emotion. There was a rumble to the north.
The cone, said Orassus. It's going to erupt again. Lord Commander,
Numion began.
We know, said Vaughn. We cannot stay here, and the orcs are at our door again. We will not let the planet do the work for us this time. One more charge, then. If this night is the end of it, the glory will be real.
There were new lights now descending from the sky. They came more slowly, more deliberately. They left the contrails of engines.
Brothers,
Orassus said.
It is not night, Numion told Vaughn. It is dawn.
On the plain, the surviving orcs screamed at the sky. The chieftain howled and shook its claw at the descending ships. Then it turned to the three legionaries and charged them, frothing in its desperate wrath to attack an enemy it could kill, even when the skies themselves had turned on it. Its minions still numbered in the tens of thousands, but they were confused now, unsure where to turn. Over the vox, Numion heard the battle cries as the defenders of the cauldron swept out of the gates to meet the enemy one last time.
Come, brothers,
he said to Orassus and Saluran.
Shall we see the end of this war?
They opened fire on the chieftain. As it raced forwards, it too seemed to know that the end had come.